Sustainable Business Fridays. We're very pleased to have Isaac Hirt Manheimer, director of the Sankofa Eco Arts Village, with us here today. And before we get started with Isaac, I just want to give folks a little bit of a background about our program and about this call. We hold Sustainable Business Fridays first and fourth Fridays every month, and the guests who come on the call are selected by students in the Bard MBA in Sustainability. Our MBA program is a new one. We're based in New York City. We're one of a handful of programs globally that fully integrate sustainability into a core business curriculum. We're also a low residence program. Our program meets Mondays through Fridays once a month, and our students have regular online classes on Tuesdays and Thursday nights. If you'd like to learn more about Bard's MBA in Sustainability, send us an email at mba@bard.edu, mba@bard.edu, or check us out on the web. And we have a terrific program coming up rest of the semester. We've got on November 25th, Bill Thomas, Global Head of Sustainability for HSBC, and then in early December, we have Amy Hall, who is in sustainability with Eileen Fisher. So a terrific way to round out the program of the year. But today we're very excited to have Isaac with us. I'm now going to turn the program over to the two students who were responsible for bringing Isaac to the call today, and that would be Carrie Sinclair and Justine Porter.
Hello. Thank you, Eben, very much for that introduction. Isaac, are you there? Okay. I just wanted to welcome Isaac to the program and thank him for joining us all the way from Ghana, where he is in the midst of running an entire program in Eco Arts at the Sankofa Center, which is an organization that focuses on developing both the artistic side of life with master drumming classes and dance classes, and also the eco-agricultural side of life, and where he focuses on permaculture. Isaac himself holds an MA from Wesleyan University in permaculture and has been promoting fair trade through his program in Ghana. Isaac? Are you there?
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. Can you go ahead and give us a background and overview of your work in Ghana?
Yes, I'll do that. And also, first let me thank you for this invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. The call may get dropped. And if that happens, then I apologize, but I'm calling from a rural village in Ghana, West Africa, and the network is not perfect. But without further ado, my background, my academic background is actually in ethnomusicology, not business at all. So I look forward to sharing my work with you and hearing your thoughts. The nature of my work is a little complicated, so I'm glad that I have a few minutes to break it down for you, give you some background. I think it's important for a company to stay focused on its core mission. That said, my strategy has been to keep an open mind and to take advantages of opportunities when they present themselves, adapting the vision for my company accordingly. So for better or worse, this approach has resulted in my working in several areas, including study abroad, construction, agriculture, and most recently, conflict transformation. The common thread is sustainability. I hope my venture will soon be lucrative, but money has never been my primary motivation. Give you a little bit more background. I attended Simon's Rock College of Bard, which is an early entrance program. Hopefully you guys know about it because it is a sister school to Bard. I spent my junior year in Ghana researching traditional music and dance, and I fell in love with the country. In 2001, I enrolled in the ethnomusicology graduate program at Wesleyan University so that I could continue to conduct research in Ghana. In 2003, I decided to establish a cultural center in Ghana to host study abroad programs. Ghana is truly an amazing country, and I wanted to share its rich culture with students from around the world. Now, Africa receives a lot of negative publicity from the media, and I hoped to promote intercultural exchanges and understanding. I believe if we get to know our neighbors a little better, we'll be less likely to drop bombs on each other. Also, the traditional arts in Ghana were devastated by missionaries and the colonial era. I hope to support the indigenous artisans by providing them with teaching opportunities, as well as markets for their products, such as glass beads, drums, textiles, etc. I worked on this project part-time. The funding for development came from my day job, which was helping to run my family business, a performing arts studio in Connecticut. Because of the long history of exploitation of both human beings and the environment in West Africa, I decided that I wanted the project to be completed in the most ethically responsible manner. I couldn't find any green building contractors around, so I actually traveled to Israel for an intensive course in permaculture and eco-village design. There, I studied ecologically sustainable building methods, an area that I became very passionate about and is now at the core of my various projects. After completing the course, I returned to Ghana and built our campus using mud bricks, solar arrays, composting toilets, etc. Building our campus, I engaged and trained many members of the surrounding communities and opened their minds to the possibility of achieving quality results using local natural materials. We hosted our first group of American students that year, that was 09, from Princeton University. In addition to offering workshops in drumming, dancing, and glass bead making, I incorporated natural building methods and sustainable agriculture into the curriculum. They also designed and spearheaded a community development project. Over the past 3 years, we've hosted a number of other programs for Princeton, Yale, and the City College of New York. All of the trips focus on culture, sustainability, and include a community development project or component. Although I did not realize it at the time, spending a decade researching traditional music and dance has been the key to my development work in Ghana. There are too many people offering solutions before taking the time to listen to their intended beneficiaries. I could not emphasize this enough. Now, in 2011, through a fellow West alum from Ghana, Wesleyan alum from Ghana, I was introduced to the UNHCR. That's the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. At this point, my work takes a slight turn, but please bear with me because it is all connected. Currently, there are over 5,000 refugees from the Ivory Coast living in Ghana. There was a mandate to transition the refugees from tents to shelters. The UNHCR became interested in my work for two reasons. One, my building methods are environmentally friendly, and refugee situations often devastate local environments. And two, they felt that I could cost-effectively utilize local materials because there's always issues. There's over 4 million refugees in Africa. So the other contractors that they had worked with who learned from conventional technical schools just could not get it done within the budget. So I was awarded a contract to build 12 houses for the most vulnerable refugees using an existing design. In May this year, 2013, I offered to redesign the shelters. My new plan cut costs by 50% and won UNHCR Ghana a grant from Geneva to build 400 houses. Now, ultimately, I came to the conclusion that UN aid for the refugee population is not sustainable. I kept thinking of the proverb, teach a man to fish. I'm still working directly with the refugees, but now it is at my cultural center. We've established a sustainable vegetable farm providing skills training, nutrition, and income to the refugee participants. They're also working with my Ghanaian artisans on the production of recycled glass beaded jewelry for export. I have incorporated my work with refugees into my study service abroad offerings, And there's actually a student-led trip coming from Princeton that is focusing on this in this area. As I mentioned at the beginning of my talk, I do work in several areas. The thread that runs through all of it is environmental sustainability and providing cross-cultural connections. I'm a startup, and you won't find much information online or anywhere. I'm loving the work, and I appreciate your lending your ear. So that's my introduction.
Thank you so much, Isaac.
We have a couple of questions
for you. And my first one is this. As a small business owner, I'm wondering, how do you manage so many simultaneous initiatives? Do you have an approach to project management?
No, I don't have any specific approach to project management. And I must say the way that I am managing all these various projects is by the seat of my pants. And it's very difficult because there isn't yet enough profit to cover the cost of employees that I would love to have. And so it's all getting done. But right now, yeah, I need more teammates.
Okay, hi, Isaac. This is Carrie again. I want to bring it back a moment to how you integrate permaculture with sustainability and development,
mm-hmm.
and specifically, how do you make?
Carrie, I'm very sorry to cut you off, it just occurred to me that I have I could expand a little bit. Because I've been working here in Ghana for several years, there are some strategies that I found have been more effective than others. So back to Justine's question, one thing that I do now is instead of hiring employees, for example, let's talk about producing recycled glass beads. At one point, I hired a master bead maker and gave him a fixed salary per month. Without any real incentive for him to produce more work or higher quality work. And what I'm definitely moving towards partnering with everybody. I believe that when individuals enjoy the fruit of their labor, then they become self-motivated, and it just seems like a fair way of doing business. So I'm headed in that direction. Okay. So, Carrie, I'm sorry. Please continue with your question.
No, that is absolutely perfect. Because you're talking about integrating the concepts of permaculture with sustainability and sustainable development, which lends itself to the structure of a nonprofit, for-profit partnership, I exactly wanted to know what you just mentioned. How do you incentivize people that you work with? People who are formerly beneficiaries of aid but have far more to offer. How do you incentivize them into for-profit partnership? For instance, your master bead.
Mm-hmm. And also, I just want to clarify that Sankofa Eco Arts Village is a for-profit venture, if that wasn't clear already. I consider it a social enterprise, and I mentioned from the beginning that financial gain is not, although it is one of our goals, is not necessarily the primary objective of this company. So the way currently we are a startup, and we've been building this campus, and we do host programs. But we don't generate much revenue. For example, the beaded jewelry, we haven't started exporting it at a very large scale at all. But the way I foresee doing it is just to calculate a formula whereby the artisans would earn a percentage of all income generated. So I don't have any more details. Like, I don't have the final solution, and I really would love to sit down with anyone out there listening, you know, who has more experience in retail, for example. Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And to those folks who are on the call listening, just a reminder, if you have a question for Isaac, you can press 5-star on your phone. That will put you in a virtual queue here, and we'll be able to have you ask your questions. Justine and Carrie, back to you guys.
Thank you. Okay, Isaac, another question that we have for you is, in working on projects of sustainability and especially implementing sustainable projects, it's very easy to run into conflicts where personal values might not align with the projects that we're working on or the values of others with whom we are working. And so we're wondering if you have any practical tips for students in the MBA program on negotiating through some of these conflicts.
Yeah. I think that's a really good question. I try and do business with people I like, and I try and do business with people, you know, that are like-minded in general. Like I mentioned, the only other job I've had is running a performing arts studio with my family. That was founded in 1989, and we have, you know, I have an incredibly strong relationship with my family members. And here in Ghana, there are a number of people that I'm working with, and the only sustainable way really for me to work with people is that we kind of share common values. And I have yet to be put in a situation where I've been forced to deal with other institutions or individuals or customers who are coming from a different perspective. So I haven't come across that issue yet, but it's very interesting to think about.
And then, yes, that definitely lends itself to the question of how to, because you work with people who are like-minded, which is absolutely a blessing and I think a situation that we would all like to ideally find ourselves in. Do you find that often your perspective on development is the same as the people you are on the ground with, and does it differ from the people who you are related to or who you're connected to in the West, in New York, for instance, your family even?
Well, I mean, on a fundamental level, I think we're all on the same page. And, for example, death is in the air here. It's a reality. I was just planting some cucumber seedlings with one of the refugee workers, and he had to run back to the camp because a 20-year-old girl had just passed, and there's funerals all the time. And I'm here with – my wife is a Ghanaian. We have two young children, and all four of us had malaria last week. The baby hasn't even celebrated her first birthday. She's had malaria twice. So everybody wants to improve public health. So generally, I think on those core issues, we're all on the same. It's only maybe some radical individual out there who feels that there's overpopulation and we should let people die or something like that. But generally, at the same time, I live in Ghana because that's, you know, is core to who I am, and I love it. I love it here. But part of the reason why I love Ghana is, you know, I did not love life in Connecticut, really, you know, to be frank with you. I think now that I'm working with flowers and vegetables. I'm constantly coming up with these analogies, but you look at a plant and you see the leaves, and they will tell you whether it needs more sun or less water. And I am a healthier organism, barring the malaria, you know, in Africa. And the reason why that is relate, you know, that tangent is relevant to your question is because some people's concept, and maybe some, you know, some people in our community believe that that progress means, you know, modern European, American, you know, modern cities. When having traveled quite a bit, and I know a lot of you listening have experienced this yourself, there's a lot that we can learn from traditional cultures. And that's actually Sankofa, our name, is a traditional symbol from the Akan culture here. And it means, it's a bird looking backwards, and it means we need to carry the wisdom of our past into the future. So I guess that's one example of how, you know, there may be different perceptions of development. Like, I come home to Fairfield County, Connecticut, and people see photos, and they're like, oh, how pitiful, look at that child in rags. And I'm like, yeah, and you're on Zoloft and divorce. Like, it's complicated.
Indeed, it is complicated, Isaac, indeed. I want to touch on the cultural nuances that you have brought up, and you have an extensive background in music, and mm-hmm. would like to know a little more specifically how that component, that cultural component, which we know is very, very strong in various countries outside in the global south, how that cultural component can be placed into a business context for a business owner.
I'm sorry, I'm not exactly sure of the question.
Okay. For example, you're a master drummer.
I'm a drummer.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you are. And so therefore you are accustomed to cadence and to making sure that people are in rhythm with each other and that the entire harmony is humming along. As a business owner, how many people do you have in your employ, and do all of those people communicate with each other as a project manager? Is it easy for you to designate, or easier for you to let things find their own harmony?
Well, personally, I'm a very controlling person. I find that, you know, if I don't keep myself in check, then my tendency is to, you know, always want to call the shot. And I think that's one way that I feel as though I've matured. At least, you know, I've recognized this, and so, you know, now I do listen more, and I think that there's a connection. I think that everything is connected, whether it's gardening or drumming or doing business, and it really has to do with understanding the nature of the people or the element. Hand. In the same way, if there's, you know, if you're playing in a quartet and three guys start, you can't just hop in without listening to them. So I think I'm pretty good at understanding, you know, the nature now. And I think definitely one key to success is to recognize the talent, you know, of individuals. I did poorly in school, and people thought I was dumb, and I hated school until I went to Simon's Rock when I was 16. But, you know, I was just a square peg in school. And so now, you know, I can appreciate different forms of intelligence, and, You know, it's amazing working at the camp, because to some of the NGOs there, you know, these are just, the people are numbers. But I, you know, I have now the most amazing chef at my eco village, you know, who had to leave the Ivory Coast because of the civil war and lived in a tent for 2 years, you know, and I've given him the opportunity. He rears animals on our land and, you know, cooks for our family and visitors, and ultimately it'll be a restaurant. And so, yeah, that's definitely, if you can understand what different, you know, individuals have to offer your company, I think that's going to be a big help.
Isaac, this is Jess again over at the Center for Environmental Policy here at Bard College. A reminder to anyone on the call, if you have a question for Isaac, you can press 5-star on your phone. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the things that make Ghana unique for business opportunities, and perhaps if you were to be encouraging sustainable business investment in Ghana, what sort of opportunities would you be excited to see come to the country or be born from within the country?
Well, I think that Ghana is unique because it's a democracy. It is a true democracy. And that was tested last month because the presidential election was contested in the Supreme Court, and it dragged on, you know, and resolved peacefully. Ghana is a very safe place. You know, I'm not saying that it's without corruption or other issues, because, you know, this it is the, you know, the developing world, and it's a reality. I think there's tremendous opportunity. The people here, for the most part, are very welcoming and hospitable. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity in the agricultural sector in particular. The cost of food is ridiculous. Like, I pay more, far more for a tomato in my tiny village than I do, you know, in Fairfield County, Connecticut. There are some challenges. There are definite challenges to overcome because it is a tropical climate. And so the same, you know, parasites that are plaguing human beings, I mean, there are soil-borne diseases and fungus and all of those things are living, but there are natural ways. So anyway, sorry to get into too much detail. Agriculture, and yeah, Ghana's a great place. Come on down.
Great. We do have a question here from someone who's called in. So if your number is 914-602-7308, you can now ask your question.
Hi there. This is Katie Minky. I'm a first year at the Bard MBA program. Thank you very much for coming and speaking with us today. I was curious about your mentors. I'm assuming that you've had several mentors who have developed you into the entrepreneur and small business owner you are. And I was wondering if you could describe some of the qualities that those mentors had that helped you along, and maybe what you tried to emulate in developing your own employees.
I have had a lot of mentors and influential teachers over the course of my life. Unfortunately, not enough that were had backgrounds in business. Like my mom, you know, and my father, but my mother in particular is a mentor and an entrepreneur. Her background was in dance ethnology, and she opened up this performing arts studio in 1989. It's still happening today, and it brings in really good money. And what she taught me was that she did not care, nor did my father, whether I was, you know, a plumber or an accountant or an ethnomusicologist, but the message at home was, do what you love. And when you do what you love, you will produce quality. And when you produce quality, then people will be interested in your services. So I think that's pretty much at the core of what I do. I said it in the first couple lines of my introduction. I am not motivated by money, but You know, by God's grace, people do sometimes want to give it to me because they like the work that I do. I'm trying to think of some other mentors. Entrepreneur is just kind of a flair, I think, that I have. It's one of those things. I don't know. I can't answer whether or not that can be, you know, it's nature versus nurture. But for me, that's just kind of how I've always been. All right. Next question.
That's great. We have another question here from a caller. Elizabeth Miller at SUNY, I think that you have a question. Hi, sorry, I'm someone who's calling from SUNY. Maybe it's Elizabeth Miller has a question. I've unmuted you. Okay, well, we'll move on. Justine and Carrie, back to you guys for a few more questions if you've got them.
Yeah. Hi, Isaac, Justine again. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little more about permaculture. What is permaculture to you, and how do you integrate that into both the eco-village and then the projects that you do outside of the eco-village?
Yeah. I am not an expert on permaculture. I did a certification course, and it blew my mind. But it's kind of a complex system of principles and ethics, and I can't give a great overview. I would encourage you all to look into it further, but generally, the way that it impacted the way that I work is, one, it encourages you to live in harmony, you know, with the earth in an environmentally sustainable manner. And another principle is to look at the inputs, to kind of take a critical look at different elements of your system. Oftentimes in permaculture design, it relates to, you know, it gives you a map for living, like a house. Like literally a map, and zone one would be your house, and then zone two you might want your animals, and zone three trees, and it encourages you. You could have a bakery that is, you know, using the principles or concept of permaculture, and it encourages you to look at these different elements and how they interact. And what we try and do is to try and meet the needs or the inputs one element with the output of another. For example, if I look at my bead shop, where we produce recycled glass beads, one of the outputs is ash. And that ash is needed by some of our plants to boost the pH of the soil. I could look at, you know, you look at the inputs of the human beings in the system. We need food, so we grow food. That input is met by, you know, the output. And then what do human beings output? There's human waste or excrement, which we do compost and then ultimately use as a powerful organic fertilizer for our citrus orchards. So, it's not my area of expertise, but I do encourage you all to check it out. It's the founder is a man named Bill Mollison from Australia, and it's good stuff.
Just as a follow-up to that, Isaac, I'm wondering if you could talk about some of the green building that you do, specifically with the mud structures and how you got into that.
Can you say that again?
Sure.
Green building and mud.
Exactly. So how you know, has your journey through permaculture led you to do green building?
Okay. Thank you.
You know, with the mud.
I'm so happy that you answered this, that you asked this question, because one of the areas that I am most passionate about is building with mud. And the reasons why it's a great idea to build your house with earth, and talking about my situation here.
You're breaking up there a little bit, Isaac. Folks, it's looked as though we might have lost Isaac for a moment here. Just give him a second. He should be able to reconnect with us. Hi, Isaac. Are you? Oh, nope. We definitely lost Isaac for a minute there. He'll call back in. So if you don't mind, just sit tight. A reminder, we do have one more question from someone on the line, so we'll enable you to ask that question once Isaac is able to rejoin us.
Hello.
Hi, Isaac.
Okay, good. You're still there. The call got dropped. Can I talk about MUD?
Feel free.
All right. Now, again, it's slightly different in the village of Cobenanta from Poughkeepsie, New York, because of zoning laws and mostly that. That's the real reason. But we this is like the Wild West where we have complete freedom. Now, here's the deal. When you build with earth, the houses, in my opinion, are far superior to the houses that they are currently constructing using cement. And one of the reasons is that the thermal properties. If you came into the house that I'm standing in now, which is made of mud, it's nice and cool because the sun cannot penetrate. It absorbs the cool air at night, and then it takes the entire day just dissipating, whereas a cement house is unbearably hot. So then you need, you know, air conditioning. Cement is very expensive. And people are struggling here to just buy school uniforms for their children. So I don't understand why they spend so much money to build their houses out of these inferior synthetic materials. A mud house, you see, the thing with earth is that it's unstabilized. So that means it's not fully waterproof. You can get around that by the overhang of your roof, keep water away. But ultimately, you can demolish your house, and it will just melt back to Mother Earth, whereas a cement blockhouse will remain, you know, forever. You can never break it back down to its components. And cement also has a tremendous amount of embodied energy, the production of it, you know, and transportation of it. So that's, you know, I just built two kindergarten classrooms for the public elementary school with a group of City College students from New York, and we built it out of earth, and the kids participated in it, and not only the City College kids, but the Cobenanta students, and that's what we're trying to do, is to get people to open their minds to the possibilities of, using natural materials. So that's a little bit about mud.
Great. We'll take that. Sorry. Do you have a follow-up question, Justine or Carrie? Sorry for cutting you off.
I do, but let's have the caller speak their question.
Okay, great. So I've just unmuted your line. The person who has their hand raised on the call, you can ask your question.
Hi, Isaac. My name is Nancy Acevedo, and I'm also an MBA student at Bard. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I find it incredibly inspirational. I'm actually terribly sorry I don't have a question regarding mud for you, considering how enthusiastic you are about it. But
Oh, that's okay. I'm happy about it. Let's talk. What's on your mind?
Thank you. So as an entrepreneur, obviously you have to be rather successful in gaining the support of people from diverse backgrounds, whether it be, you know, obviously from different countries, cultures, economic status, or ethnicity, and in developing your constituents, we believe requires an appreciation of their emotional well-being, balanced with what needs to be done to move your business forward. So, in comparison to a more traditional business in the U.S., how have you changed as a leader or in your leadership style to reflect this sort of emotional intelligence in your recruitment and development of your particular team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you. I don't know much about business, conventional business in the U.S. And what I'm doing is, I see it is highly improvisational. I didn't have a mentor who taught me how to, organize the business side of things. But I care, I truly care about human beings and those people that I'm working with. So I can't envision doing things any other way, because maybe I could possibly, in theory, I could increase profit by treating people worse, although to me that doesn't make sense, because then they wouldn't be happy and do their work well. But even if I earned more money, then I wouldn't be I wouldn't be happy. There's a lot of rich people that are miserable, so that just doesn't make any sense to me. So I love your question, but the answer is, that I haven't given too much thought about my model of business and how that differs from conventional business, because I'm just improvising.
Great. Thanks, Isaac. Justine and Carrie, back to you guys.
I'll take the next one, actually. And thank you, actually, Isaac, for your candid explanation of being a business owner and an entrepreneur without the formal training necessarily. It is exactly, as Nancy said, very inspirational to know that there are ways to exactly emotionally intuit your relationships with people who are employees and volunteers, and that it is not always an entirely structured endeavor. And then I wanted to just bring it back for one moment to your fascination with mud and more specifically nature. And in particular, we know that you're doing a project with self-composting toilets that in fact generate power. Could you explain a little bit about that, please?
Okay, cool. I'm glad that I like this question. So this is relating to both, it's a study abroad. It's a concept for a study abroad trip. I've got a great relationship with the City College, and they, every summer they're doing service learning in Ghana. And I also just want to put a plug out there for anyone who's, excited about this project and wants to come to Ghana in July, could do it for academic credit through the City College of New York. So check it out. So last year we built these two kindergarten classrooms, and we're looking for a project for this year. And I discussed with Rotary International in my hometown, and they wanna fund a project, and they're interested in sanitation. So why use drinking water to flush a toilet, and then just let it sit in the septic tank and then collect it and pump to who knows where, when it could be used for so much more. So the system that we're going to implement is called a biogas digester, and basically the methane from the human waste gets extracted and stored, and then it's piped and can be used either to power a generator, because there is no electricity in our school currently. But I have donated some laptops that we, did some fundraising. So that's the idea, is we could power a mobile computer lab with the students' poo. Or you can also use it for cooking. They sell stoves that connect directly to the system, and there's a school feeding program that has boosted attendance. So instead of buying natural gas, we can use the methane. So that's the toilet. Pretty cool, right? And the whole system is cost $10,000 installed.
And just a follow-up to that, do you have a rough estimate of how much money that would be saving the school?
No, I haven't done that calculation. But, the toilet system will be benefiting the schools in so many ways, and fundamentally by controlling the vectors like flies, which are currently spreading disease. So it's just an added bonus, really, that we can utilize, the gas. And, But we need, as you can tell, There's a lot brewing here, so I need more. I love when I get, you know, volunteers and students and put them on projects. And Justine had asked a question before about how do I manage, you know, multiple projects. And I would love to take, like, woofers interested in organic agriculture and just individuals and put them on projects.
Well, you may have a couple volunteers after this.
All right. Well, I've got a home, and Chef Boeuf is ready, you know, to hook it up in the kitchen. So come on down.
Sounds good. Justine?
Isaac, I do have another question for you. So far in speaking with you, we've heard, we just heard about the biogas project that you have going on, the mud building agricultural program in a refugee camp, study abroad exchanges, and an organic farm, and potentially a restaurant. I mean, you have so many different projects going on, and they're all so exciting. Are there any other projects that we should know about that you're working on?
You know, I could just hear my dad, you know, or picture him giving me this look like, Isaac, you've got too much stuff going on. But really, they're related. They're definitely related. You know, for example, the farm that we have here is producing the food that we are eating and that we'll be serving. We mentioned that, you know, there's this eco village, and I do host study abroad students, but I also kind of want to give you a clearer picture. Like right now, we have 14 mud brick rooms with solar panels that host the foreign students. But it's also ultimately going to be just an eco-tourist destination. We're 10 minutes from the beach. We're 15 minutes from the UNESCO heritage site of Cape Coast Castle, which was the main, you know, one of the primary hubs during the transatlantic slave trade. To answer your question, I'm sure there's some other stuff brewing, but hopefully, you know, I think I really do feel good. I feel great because we're making progress. And more students are coming, and there are customers, and it's tough. It's not easy, but, you know, yeah, we're on it.
Okay. I would actually like to ask you one question about your fair trade initiative. And you, on the website, you mentioned that many traditional arts are considered subpar by Ghanaian nationals, and I, from personal experience, know this to be true in many regions of the developing world. And has the popularity of fair trade increased interest in return to these arts? Has it helped to bring any for-profit business into the country?
You know, as I mentioned before, I have like a decent amount of experience now hosting groups and working on various development projects. But you know, we don't really, the export of handicrafts has been kind of simmering on the back burner a little bit. But I do want to say that there's a fellow entrepreneur doing great work. He has a company called Iandisa. He's from my hometown, and he, you know, so I don't have that fair trade certification and have not done much retail. But so he's kind of a partner that is helping to import the goods. So, yeah, I don't have too much to say on that topic.
Indeed.
Justine. Sure. On a similar note, Isaac, you know, Cape Coast is a relatively big city as far as Ghana goes, and a beautiful one with lots of activists doing great work. And so I'm wondering if you could talk about, you know, whether or not you have a network of people who are doing similar work and with whom you can bounce ideas off of.
Let me think for a moment. I can't think of other, you know, the answer is no. I don't really have close working relationship with many other organizations on the ground here. I do with like individual farmers and artisans, but not so much with other like-minded NGOs or social enterprises. So that's an area that I would like to develop. And there's a proverb in Ghana that comes to mind, and it says, one tree can never be a forest. And I say that all the time, and I truly believe it. So I definitely do want to link up with more like-minded people.
And, Isaac, we have one more question here from a caller on the line. So I'm going to go ahead and let that person ask their question. If your number is 315-794-6743, you can ask your question.
Hi there. This is Jordan Angerosa, also a first-year student from the MBA program. And I've heard you say two different ways that you guys are powering your eco-village that you have there, both solar and the energy generated from these composting toilets. But I was wondering, is there anywhere else that you guys get electricity from or any other ways that you guys generate energy?
The composting toilet with the biogas digester is actually a project that we're donating to the government school in the community. It's not on our premises. Our electricity, we do have composting toilets, but ours is a much simpler system where what we produce is fertilizer and not biogas, just to clarify that. And we have solar power, but we're also connected to the national grid, which is unreliable. So at times when it's working, it helps a lot, but you can't count on it. That's where we get our power. But and we obviously, as I mentioned before, we design our structures in such a way so that they're passively cooled and ventilated, and we try and minimize the the amount of energy that we need.
Great. I'm Justine and Carrie. We have time for one more question from you guys.
Okay, great. So you, Isaac, you mentioned that you've had groups from Princeton in the City University. How did you get to the point where you were regularly bringing student groups over? Did you reach out to the universities or develop those through networking?
No. Currently, it's I don't know, Justine. How did you end up coming to my place? Ken. Okay. I don't know. It's word of mouth. We have not done any, as you can see by our dinky website. And actually, I'm coming to the U.S. next week, and I'm working with a graphic designer, and we're building a brand new website. And I'm going to tell these stories on a daily basis on our blog and with photos. And I'll send Justine a link so that you guys can stay in tune if you're interested. But, just really by word of mouth. And it's a blessing. It's been a blessing to have, to work with Yale and the Yale International Relations Association. You had asked about any other initiatives, and we are actually, we're going to help establish a health clinic next year in the community, and I'm working with a Yale group on that. So there are a lot of things brewing, but what has been great is I can say, I don't know if it's if maybe luck that the group comes, but once the groups come, then the participants here, we just connect, and then they come back, and then they organize, and it grows. So that's how we've been doing business, and that just relates back to what my mom said. It's like if I went into study abroad because I heard it was a booming business, I'd have some dumb program, but because I live for it and I'm passionate about and believe I was put on this earth to do what I'm doing, then, people are happy and, we're growing. So hopefully you can come away with, something.
That's a great place to stop, Isaac. Thanks so much for kind of sharing your wisdom with us and your experience. And your improvisation. It's been really great to talk to you today. A reminder to everyone on the call that on the 22nd, that's the fourth Friday, we'll be hearing from Bill Thomas, the Global Head of Sustainability at HSBC. He'll be giving a talk from 12 to 1, the same time as this call, called Learning to Lead. Also at the Center for Environmental Policy here at Bard, we run the C2C Fellows Leadership Program for students interested in sustainable business and politics and high-impact careers. These workshops will be happening at UC Berkeley next weekend and then in the spring here at Bard down in Florida and in Illinois. Isaac, we'd love to give you the chance to have the last word if there's anything else you'd like to say.
I want to thank all of you and Justine in particular for bringing me into your circle, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, and thanks again to everyone who called in.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Isaac.